Good morning. We're certainly appreciative of your attendance this morning. We've got a great crowd, as expected, but it's exceeding even our numbers. So we're thankful that you're here with us this morning. You're visiting with us. I want to also welcome you to let you know that we are so glad that you're here. And if there's anything that we can do or you need to speak to us, please stick around long enough for us to get to know you. We would love to do so. So let me get set up here. So I think at least the ones that are here regularly know my enjoyment of speaking about places and the significance of places in the Bible. And let's start there this morning. Cyrene isn't a place that we normally spend a lot of time on. It wasn't one of the stops on the travels of Paul, and in fact we don't even see him going through North Africa. But Cyrene was in what's called modern day Libya, very close to Tripoli, just slightly off of the coast there. And what's surprising about it is it plays a pretty significant role in the New Testament times, if we were to step back and look at all the references. But we've got archaeological evidence that there were Jewish settlers in this area all the way back to the times of King Solomon. And then there was a fairly large migration during the Greek rule in the times of Hellenization that the Jewish people went through. And during Roman times, they even had special privileges as a citizen of Cyrene, where they would be even considered with on equality or even have citizenship in some ways. So it grew and became a very important location, a settlement, a city of Jewish importance. There are some estimates there may have been 100,000 Jews living in Cyrene by the time of Jesus. And one of the interesting things about this place, and gives us some indication of why it was so important, is there was a special herb that grew only in the area around Cyrene. And it was so important of the people of the time that multiple historians wrote about its healing qualities to improve respiratory problems, digestive problems. It was very powerful. It was said to be by weight worth more than gold. And even the coin here that I have pictured, they minted their coins with a picture of this weed, this herb that grew out there. And you may be sitting there saying, well, tell me what it is. I'm going to get on Amazon and I'm going to try it out and order some of that. And that would be fantastic. Unfortunately, they loved it to extinction. And they found that animals that grazed on top of this herb had a particularly delicious taste. And they over-cultivated the fields until one day it's gone. We no longer have it. We've got a lot of written about it. It's quite unfortunate. But it was part of the trade and the influence that this for the longest time, for centuries and centuries that this city had. And again, we see the significance if we were to add up all the passages that we see in the New Testament. So we see that Cyrenians were there on the day of Pentecost and heard Peter stand up and pray. We see that they played such a role that they even had a synagogue named after them. In Acts chapter 6, it talks about the freedman or the free man, and really they're boasting about their status, but they were wealthy enough and prominent enough that they had their own city, their own synagogue. We see that there were Cyrenians there at the presence of Stephen's stoning. And then they also played a role in spreading the gospel and starting the work in Antioch. But the story that I want to look at today is just one particular person from Cyrene. And by the way, I may bounce between some people say Cyrene, Cyrene. I hope we realize that most of the names that we repeat in the Bible and that we've learned, it sounded nothing like the way that they were actually said in the time of the Bible. It's Cyrene. They wouldn't have known if I would have to go back in time and say, hey, can I get there? Where are you talking about, right? So I may bounce back and forth, but most people believe something close to the name of Cyrene is what we're talking about. But we focused a lot this morning on the crucifixion of Jesus, and we see that he's gone through these mock trials and many times found innocent. Right? They had to conjure up and make up charges against him, and Pilate tried to let him set free. They demanded to have a murder released out to them instead of Jesus, and they cried out for him to be crucified. Pilate tried to appease them by mercilessly beating Jesus, by flogging him. And they continued to say, crucify him, crucify him. Where Pilate eventually gives in. And Jesus is carrying the cross, and we see that he's able to make it for a certain period of time, but there was concern that he couldn't bear it. He was so weakened from the loss of blood and the beatings that the Romans couldn't allow him to die before he ever got to the cross. And they are coming out of the city when they're going to compel Simon of Cyrene, who was coming in from the country, to carry that cross. Notice the language here. They seized him. They found a man. They compelled a passerby. Right? This is, we know that there was laws that the Romans had. They could compel anybody at up to 1,000 paces or a mile to carry the load. And they found someone to do that. We know that Luke tells us that there was a great multitude of people that follow Jesus in mourning what was happening to him, and he says, and the women. And really what that probably should be translated is that's a cumulative force that Luke was trying to make this. It was mainly women. It was especially women there. So they're having to look for someone to lay this cross on. And we know from Jewish laws that any contact with blood would make them unclean. This was the Passover. And if there were men there, they very likely would have protested that, you can compel me, but not against my religious rites that are about to occur in the city. So they were looking for somebody. Very likely, they looked at this man as he was happening to come in and said, he's not from around here. It may have even been the color of his skin. In fact, most people, when they portray the Passion of Christ, they're going to portray Simon as an African. But they could tell he was different. We're going to seize him and compel him. We have found someone. This isn't a situation where it was a here am I, send me. Right? This is God's own people that were there not to bear the cross, that a foreigner has to do it. Now, Simon was very likely a Jew himself, or at least a proselyte, very there for the very reason to worship to the Passover. He certainly didn't come there to be a part of this scene that was occurring at the time. Luke records for us a detail that none of the other gospel writers record. He says, and they led him away. They seized one, Simon of Cyrene, who was coming in from the country, and they laid on him the cross to carry it behind Jesus. We have to wonder, was Luke trying to remind us, trying to show us a real parable of what Jesus spoke about when he says, if anyone would come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross daily and follow me. Whoever does not bear his own cross and come after me cannot be my disciple. Simon, not likely to have shown up that day expecting to bear that cross, to be this illustration, this story for us that points us back to the teaching of Jesus and what true discipleship looks like. We know that the cross and the way that Jesus refers to it here is more than just how we bear under the trials and the struggles of this life. What did the cross mean to Jesus? What did it represent? Was it just how he dealt with difficult times and struggles of this life? Or was it full self-sacrifice? Was it a full denial of self? We see the most unselfish act that's ever occurred on this earth being represented by Christ and the cross. That's what the cross is. And we see it in Jesus' teaching. Let him deny himself and take up his cross. Oh, I didn't. But it certainly includes those difficult times, those trials, those struggles we've seen. This daily cross that we bear, we've seen our own brethren that have had to struggle. With difficult times, and we see real living examples all around us of those that would follow the example. In Mark chapter 8, if you want to turn there, Mark chapter 8 and verse 34, and this is Jesus speaking. He says, and calling the crowd to him with his disciples, and he said to them, if anyone would come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. For whoever would save his life will lose it. But whoever would lose his life for my sake and his gospels will save it. For what does it profit a man to gain the whole world and forfeit his soul? For what can man give in return for his soul? For whoever is ashamed of me and in my words and this adulterous and sinful generation, of him will the Son of Man also be ashamed when he comes in the glory of his Father with his holy angels. Jesus just doesn't tell us, just do it. Right? When he says to pick up your cross, deny himself, follow me, he doesn't stop there, but he gives reasons of why. He says anything that you're going to give up in this life, what you're going to gain is far greater. The thing that you're going to possess is so valuable that it's worth more than the whole world. That's what you're going to get. And not only that, I'm going to claim you as my own when I come into my glory. He doesn't just say, deny himself and take up his cross. He gives us the reasons why. And there's so many passages that we could look at. If you look at Philippians chapter 2, so what does this look like? When Paul writes, do nothing from selfish ambition or conceit, but in humility count others more significant than yourselves. What does he point to as how we would do that? How would we do nothing from selfish ambition or conceit? How would we be humble? What is our example of doing that? It's Jesus and the cross. So what happened to Simon? We have this great story of that they're all three of the synoptic gospel writers, they all three name him. But notice in Mark's account what he says, and they compelled passerby, Simon of Cyrene, who was coming in from the country, the father of Alexander and Rufus, to carry his cross. The father of Alexander and Rufus. Mark's writing that because people are going to know who he's talking about. It's not just some random person that he's pointing them to. It's the father of Alexander and Rufus. That's who. As evidence that the things that potentially Alexander and Rufus are doing actually happened. Their father is the one that bore the cross. Mark knows. So where do we see Rufus again? Travis knows. He's mentioned by Paul in the book of Romans. And Rufus's mother, which by the time that Paul writes that book, Simon is not likely to have been there. And someone may say that, but that's, I just think it was just some random person that was there at the time and we don't know anything else about Simon. Well, they're a lot of fun. But let's really think about this. And Travis alluded to it this morning in his talk. At all of the times of Jesus' greatest struggles in why he was on this earth, when he was tempted after wandering in the desert, when he prayed in the garden, what did God do for him? He sent an angel and comforted him. And very soon there was going to be a time that Jesus would be hanging on the cross when there would be no one to offer any mercy to him, not even a cup of water. And when he would cry out, my God, why have you forsaken me? And there would be no relief. He was made sin for us. He was carrying the sins of the world on him at that time. So at the very last time that there would be any help, any mercy that was shown to our Savior as he led to the cross, do we think God would leave that to just anybody? I don't. I think he put it into the hands of someone that would for the rest of his life tell this story over and over again. He would tell it to his sons, Alexander and Rufus. And then they would go spread the gospel. And we do have evidence of that. Maybe one of the reasons why Paul didn't have to travel to North Africa, because we know that it was well discipled. The church at Cyrene in the first and second century was a large group. For a long time. Who did that? It was the person that picked up the cross and followed after Jesus. There's likely to have been many at the time that when Jesus was there that saw Simon be compelled to be pressed into service. And they likely had said, "Wow, he is one unlucky person. He is in the wrong place at the wrong time. I just can't. What did he do? What did he sin to have this thrown on top of him? He's not going to be going into the temple. He's not going to be celebrating the Passover." But Simon got to witness the greatest Passover, the greatest sacrificial lamb that was offered on our behalf. He helped him to the cross. He gives us an example. Luke makes it clear as an example of what true discipleship looks like. Selflessness, self-denial, self-sacrifice. That daily we would choose to pick up our cross and follow after Jesus. I think the story shows us that, and in much through the Bible, we can read over and over again that God chooses what the world would see as the most unlikely people, sometimes the most reluctant people, to accomplish His will. That should be a great encouragement for us. Right? That God can see fit to accomplish His will through us, by us. All of us can play a role. I don't believe Simon was in the wrong place at the wrong time and just unlucky. First off, I don't believe when it comes to the Scripture there's anything arbitrary or anything done by chance. That if we don't understand what it means and we don't know, it's just because we don't know it and we don't see it. Everything has a purpose and a place and a reason why. And I don't think this story is here just as just bad luck, just unfortunate, wrong place, wrong time. No. And I don't think Simon would have said the same thing either. What a great honor and privilege, but also very sad that a Savior was essentially extending His suffering, His agony by helping Him, but also ensuring He made it to that place of crucifixion, that He would bear the sins of all of us. And what a great honor. If you're here today, I believe you're in the right place at the right time. If you're wanting to pick up the cross, become a disciple of Jesus, Jesus points us and tells us to count the cost. While it does involve full self-sacrifice, denial of self, selflessness that goes against everything that we're used to, Jesus teaches us what we get in return is so much greater. Our souls in eternity. He's going to claim us as His own. This morning, if you haven't made that decision, that choice, You are in the right place at the right time. Right now. And we can help. It would make us so happy. I believe everyone in here knows what to do and what's required. What's left is your decision. Why are we waiting? It's a great honor. It's a great privilege. And many of us can attest to the great comfort and encouragement that we have in carrying that cross, to helping one another, to bearing one another's burdens, and following after Jesus. Why are we waiting?